Next case is 06-275, the Ohio Academy of Nursing Homes versus the Ohio Department of Job and Family Services. Mr. Webster.
Thank you. May it please the court, Mr. Chief Justice, Justices, and Assistant Attorney General. I'm Jeffrey Webster on behalf of the appellants in this matter, the Ohio Academy of Nursing Homes, Main Street Terrace, Arcadia Acres, Willowwood, and Spring Meadows, the latter four being Medicaid providers and the Academy of Trade Association, representing several hundred nursing facilities throughout the state of Ohio, all of whom have Medicaid provider agreements and are therefore entitled to a reimbursement rate, as we call it, a form of specie under the Ohio Hospital Association decision, to a rate calculated and paid as the General Assembly directs. We come here when the General Assembly directed a specific methodology by which a rate would be set and also directed the result of that methodology. The General Assembly specified that the rate shall pay reasonable cost in 5111.21 and also directed an extensive definition of what reasonable cost is in 511.20. When the providers experienced an approximate 400% increase in their Medicaid rate, that portion which was used to pay workers' compensation premiums, a rate that is calculated by the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, the experience rate, it is multiplied times payroll, which in this case, interestingly and different from other employers such as myself, that calculation is multiplied times payroll, but payroll is a function of compliance with Department of Health regulations, which regulates the numbers and types of staff that must be present. So we have two government agencies together that develop a rate to pay for workers' compensation, and as we know, we're the only state, I believe, remaining in the United States, that it is a state-directed, state-controlled workers' compensation system under which all employers must participate, even if you self-fund or privately fund, that is still administered by the Bureau of Workers' Compensation, who still calculates your premiums. The General Assembly directed, in the event of a government mandate, the rate shall be paid. The increase shall be paid. Whether or not this is a government mandate, I believe, is direct. We don't need a mandate from a court. We don't need a writ of mandamus to issue. Why? The General Assembly did it twice. In 511.27F, in the event of a government mandate, the state shall pay an adjustment to the rate. That rolls into 511.21, which says the state shall pay the reasonable cost of a facility. It's interesting when we look. We know stare decisis would tell us that we've been here before. Indeed, under the Academy versus Berry decisions, in what I think is a fairly unique set of circumstances, this court, in the space of, I believe, almost within the same term, took the same case a second time to tell the 10th District Court of Appeals, in shorthand, we meant it when we said it the first time, a declaratory judgment is an available cause of action. And when we look at the statute, 2720.
Let me stop you there.
Yes, sir.
As you know, the state has made an issue of the fact, this simple issue here is whether this is properly a declaratory judgment action or mandamus action, whether you have to proceed in mandamus or not. As you know, the state makes quite an issue of the fact that below in the trial court, your Second Amendment complaint, and then it seemed, as I read, it seemed to me that consistently you argue that mandamus was the appropriate vehicle to challenge the action of the department here. Why the change in your view?
Well, there's been an interesting shift in views. When the Academy versus Berry case was first argued, the Assistant Attorneys General argued that mandamus was not an appropriate remedy. When the Morning View decision was issued by the Court of Appeals and this court declined jurisdiction, then we filed an amended complaint in this action that asserted both as an alternative in the event declaratory judgment is not available. And that is how the prayer reads. In the event declaratory judgment is not available, then we seek a writ of mandamus. The exact format was presented in the original Academy versus Berry complaint. There, because the law was not really clear, because we had a series of cases that were in mandamus that were nursing home reimbursement cases. We had a series of cases that were in declaratory judgment. So in the Academy Berry, we pled both. When this court declined the Morning View appeal, we amended the complaint and asserted, because in some point somewhere, a 400% increase, unexpected, in workers' compensation premium rates needs to get accounted for. We look at this in an interesting light. After the briefs were filed, we began noticing, unfortunately, after the briefs were filed, there is a line of cases, and that's what the Court of Appeals has adapted and compelled nursing facilities now to come under, in a sense, even without mentioning the Academy versus Berry decision, to come under. And as this court noted in the CLE decision that was cited, and as the Supreme Court notes in the Pippoli versus STRS decision, there is a body of administrative agencies, state agencies, and the references made, for example, in the Albin decision, that where there is no right of an appeal and an abuse of discretion, mandamus is appropriate for agencies like state teachers' retirement system. Well, we have peeled back what is an agency like state teachers' retirement system or an agency like PERS. It is materially and fundamentally different from the Department of Job and Family Services. One, if I look at PERS at section 145.04, an agency near and dear to this court's heart and the assistant AGs, the General Assembly says at 145.04, the general administration and management of, well, shorthand PERS, quote, and the making effective of chapter 145 is vested in the board. We have agencies like state teachers, PERS, STRS, police and firemen, etc.
The Bureau of Workers' Compensation be included there? We have many, many cases come to this court in which mandamus has been filed in court appeals because the claimant is challenging or someone is challenging the percentage of disability.
Exactly, where the claimant is. However, this court in the Santos decision, where it was an employer who came, filed a declaratory judgment action regarding the contribution rate and whether that was an appropriate rate and whether they were entitled to a refund, this court said declaratory judgment's appropriate.
Well, that's rate, but I'm talking about percentage of disability. There are hundreds and hundreds of cases, literally, that through the years that are filed, mandamus actions, because the Bureau or the Industrial Commission has awarded a percentage of permanent partial or permanent total disability, and either the employer or the employee disagrees with it. That seems to me to be similar to your situation here. There's an abuse. The argument is there's no appeal because it's not a question of whether the person can participate in the fund. It's a percentage of the disability, and that's argued. Always the argument is the Bureau or the Commission abuses discretion, and it's a mandamus action. How is that different than this case? They have a right. They're not closed out of the legal system, as you suggest in your brief, that if you don't have a declaratory judgment action, somehow there's no right of no remedy. But there certainly is. Mandamus is certainly a remedy.
It is a remedy with a much higher standard and bar and hurdle to cross, where we have the General Assembly specifying a mandate that rates shall be reasonable, and this court specifying that declaratory judgment is an adequate remedy. We're not seeking damages, as the Ohio Hospital Association case adopted the U.S. Supreme Court's Maryland decision, which adopted Judge Bork's decision in Maryland, all of which stand unreversed. This is not about a rate. It is about the specie. It is, for example, as this court held, thus, while in many instances an award of money is an award of damages, occasionally a money award is also a specie remedy at page 105 of the Ohio Hospital Association case. This is not money that goes to, as in workers' comp, that goes to, let's pick one, Arcadia Acres, for Arcadia Acres to use for its own purpose. The General Assembly has directed that that organization shall use that money not for its benefit as the workers' compensation decisions, STRS, PERS are. It shall use it to purchase and provide life-sustaining medical care, treatment services, room, board, et cetera, all that panoply of things that it is obligated to deliver through itself to the recipient who resides in the bed. Indeed, payments are made specifically to each individual resident on a line item account. So it's not.
Do you think you cannot make the burden on mandamus? Is that why you're so reluctant to go that route?
I don't think I need to meet that burden. I think when the General Assembly says
that's not my question.
I think it could be met, particularly in this particular case where the department just did an ostrich and stuck its head in the sand and said there was no government mandate.
And if you think it can be met, why are you so reluctant to pursue it?
It is, I think, more cumbersome to go through. I think it's a longer process, and indeed it is a higher standard of proof, and one that this court found in the Academy versus Berry decision two times, and in the Ohio Hospital Association, where there is a plain and adequate remedy at law, don't go to mandamus. For example, if I were going to go in mandamus, I can come direct to this court. And by stat, by constitution, I can come to this court to file mandamus. This type of case has traditionally been brought in common pleas courts, and it comes up through the process if it needs to come through the process as a declaratory judgment action because there's a plain and adequate remedy at law. This is much different than the retirement systems cases where they're not subject to direct control by the governor. Indeed, the General Assembly doesn't even fund of the operations of those agencies.
Have you successfully prosecuted one of these cases in the past?
The Academy of Nursing Homes versus Berry.
And the formula or the specie that you utilized there was?
Declaratory judgment. There was declaratory judgment in Ethicare versus Creasy, declaratory judgment in Barber Park versus Creasy. There was declaratory judgment in Salem Park versus Creasy. In fact, if you go in and put into the Lexis search systems, nursing homes, Medicaid, declaratory judgment, you will find an amazing array of cases that date back near 30 years that address and generally find against the state.
But you had two courts tell you belong in the other one.
I've had one court in two different actions.
Yeah.
They came to that same conclusion in the Academy versus Berry case, which this court reversed. Interestingly, it went back. They denied it again, and this court took jurisdiction. And essentially, if you read the second opinion.
Come back to the question then. What is it that you want us to rule here in this case? You want us to just come out with a declaration and indicate that the proper cause of action or the proper specie of litigation for this type is declaratory judgment? That's what you're seeking from this court?
I think the application of stare decisis is that, yes, Academy versus Berry 1 and 2 and Ohio Hospital Association remain good law. There has been, the General Assembly certainly has been aware of those decisions in the years that it has passed. We've had numerous budget bills, and not once has the General Assembly shown any inclination to say, you know, we don't think declaratory judgment's a good idea. It has been used traditionally. I would like to reserve the rest of my time for rebuttal, if I may.
Thank you, Mr. Webster. Ms. Thomas.
Thank you, Mr. Chief Justice, and may it please the court. I'd like to start first by addressing the point about whether a government mandate decision is a discretionary one. The parties agreed, to my understanding, up until we reached this court, that when a government mandate has been found to exist and ODGFS makes a decision how much and whether to award relief, that's discretionary. And we've explained in our brief why we think that the language in the statute and rules support that. Because we have a discretionary decision that's at issue here, that distinguishes this case from cases like Berry and Ohio Hospital Association and other cases mentioned by appellants, where the decision being reviewed or being challenged was not a discretionary one, but what was being asked of the courts is that a statutory right be vindicated. A right that's under a statute or a contract or some other law, those are things that declaratory judgment is designed to address. It's not designed efficiently to be an appellate mechanism, the way that the mandamus vehicle has been adapted in Ohio to use when there's no appeal from an agency discretionary decision, then mandamus has been used. This court, is, I'm sure, is aware there's a long line of cases that's been issued by this court and other courts.
Before you proceed, could we talk about the what's discretionary here in terms of the government mandate or the Jobs and Family Services decision? Are you saying that whether or not there is a mandate is a discretionary decision by Jobs and Family Services, or whether or not there is a mandate, whatever they decide to do about it is discretionary, or both?
Thank you, Your Honor. The second one, whether there's a government mandate or not does not strike us as a discretionary decision. There's a statutory definition of what a government mandate is. Statute, rule, or policy enacted or amended after January 1st of 1992. That can be ascertained by a court de novo. There's no discretion in that decision. But once there is one found to exist, either by the agency or by a court.
What if the agency says one doesn't exist, but in fact one does exist?
And this brings us into what the 10th District recognized as being a two-step process when a government mandate rate adjustment is applied for. One of the problems in this case was that the complaint addressed a result that couldn't have yet been reached because the agency said there isn't a government mandate here. This has been in existence since before January of 1992. It doesn't meet the definition. So that shuts down the inquiry at that point, and there's nothing else to do. There's no discretion to be exercised because that determination has been made. That's the first step of the process. If the agency decides that there is a government mandate or is told by a court that there is one, the next step is to exercise discretion, make a decision how much relief to award, if any, to the various applicants. In this case, there would be many.
So what is the applicants, in this case, the nursing homes, remedy when they get the first decision says there is no government mandate, but they believe there is one?
We agree with the 10th District that the proper remedy there is also a mandamus action. This court has held in a number of cases that mandamus is an appropriate vehicle when one wants to compel an agency or an official to exercise discretion when there's a legal duty to do so and he's failing to do so. The Duryea case is an example of that. Huntington Insurance Company versus Duryea, State X Rel Hodges v. Taft, and there's some other ones that we've cited in our brief. That there's a line of cases that this fits right into when there's a duty to exercise discretion on the part of an official and that's not being exercised, a person can go to a court and bring a mandamus action and say, this duty exists to exercise discretion and they're not doing it, please make them do it.
And why would it not be just as appropriate to ask for a court declaration under declaratory judgment action that this is a mandate?
In the first step of the two-step?
In the first step.
Well, it seems to us to fit more closely with the mandamus vehicle. I'd like to point out that it wouldn't just be a matter of deciding whether a government mandate exists. It would be a matter of deciding if the applicant pointed adequately to a government mandate such that the agency's responsibility to exercise discretion could have been triggered. For example, somebody could write a letter to the agency and apply for a government mandate rate adjustment and say, there are some new EPA regulations that force our costs up. They've gone up $50,000. We'd like you to give us $50,000. Well, that wouldn't be enough to trigger the responsibility of the agency to then consider the application, even if that same person could go to a court and have it declared, and maybe they're going to tell the court exactly where this regulation is, exactly how it helps their costs go up. So it's still more of an appellate review because there would be a record that would have to be reviewed, and that just is more closely aligned with the way that mandamus is used when there's discretion involved and an agency or official either needing to act and exercise that discretion or have an alleged abuse of discretion corrected.
Counsel, in Ohio Academy of Nursing Homes versus Berry, the first one, we said that Medicaid providers may bring an injunction or declaratory judgment action to enforce rights, and we're referring in that case to Section 1396, which is a state plan for medical assistance. But if I listen to your argument, it seems as though we would have to reverse Berry. Can you address that?
Thank you, Your Honor. You would not have to reverse Berry at all, and the reason is because Berry addressed a claim that a statewide decrease in the rate for Medicaid in one of the cost categories was too low. It violated federal law. That means there was a statutory right that could be declared, and a violation of that right could be declared. There wasn't an application for some kind of a benefit that has a record about that that was decided, and the person thinks that there was an abuse of discretion, which does fit right into the mandamus line of cases. In Berry, it was a straight declaratory judgment. My rights under this statute are thus and so, and they've been violated over here by this thing that the agency did. Please declare that that's a violation of my statutory right. I also would like to point out that Berry happened during the time when Ohio had the retrospective payment system for Medicaid. And during that time, the payment system was whatever the agency, the provider spent that was reasonable and allowable, generally was paid back at the end of some reconciliation period. In 1993, which is after Berry and Ohio Hospital Association, Ohio instituted the prospective payment system, where costs are set ahead of time based on a base year cost. Usually it was about a year ahead. And the provider found out what their rate was going to be per patient per day, and you have to live with this rate. Maybe you'll make a profit next year, maybe you won't, but this is the rate you're going to get. Please manage your business in accordance with knowing that. And then there were some exceptions built into that system called rate adjustments and rate reconsiderations, where under certain limited circumstances, a provider could come to the agency and say, you know, I have this unusual circumstance that meets, I hate to use the word circumstance. One of the rate adjustments is called an extreme circumstances. One is called extreme hardship, and one is called government mandate. There are some other ones, but those are the three that are discretionary. And any decision made about those three kinds of rate adjustments fall into the discretionary decisions that are not appealable, and it's clear that none of these are appealable, and I don't think there's any dispute about that. They fall right into the mandamus line of cases that say, if there's a non-appealable agency discretionary decision and you want to challenge it, you think there's been an abuse of discretion, your vehicle is mandamus.
Although in Berry, we're talking about reimbursement rates also under a different plan, but still reimbursement rates. So you're saying we should ignore Berry as far as saying they have the right to go to declaratory judgment, seek an injunction, and instead require that they seek an extraordinary writ.
Well, I believe it might have been a prohibitory injunction in Berry, which would have prevented them from instituting the new rule or statute that they passed. But we do not think you have to ignore Berry or overrule it, and that's because in Berry, there was not a discretionary decision at issue like there was here. This is about one of the three types of discretionary rate adjustments. That means there's no set amount that you can claim any kind of an automatic entitlement to as a provider. You come to the agency, there's a range of possible outcomes. That's what makes it discretionary. The agency might decide to pay nothing. It might decide to pay the provider some amount of what it requested. It might provide the full amount of what was requested. But there's not some statutory right to a discretionary rate adjustment. Just by definition, there can't be one. In Berry, what was recognized was a statutory right to not have the Medicaid rate reduced on the basis that it was, and an Ohio Hospital Association, the same thing. So the element of discretion is what separates Berry and Ohio Hospital Association from this case. And those cases wouldn't fall into the line of cases that the 10th District recognized that we've cited in our brief. Pippoli, Potts, Portage Lakes, Albin, Van Dyke, all those cases that say when you have a non-appealable discretionary agency decision, the proper vehicle for that is mandamus. This court even recognized that there's no other vehicle when one wants to challenge such a decision in the Potts case.
Now, appellants were arguing, if I heard the argument correctly, that there are shalls in this statute, that it's really not a discretionary decision if there is a government mandate. How do you account for the difference between what they're arguing and what you're arguing is whether it's discretionary or it's obligatory?
The word shall does appear in the statute and the rule for government mandate, but this is what it says. It doesn't say shall pay the extra cost of the provider to comply with the government mandate. It says ODGFS shall adjust the rate to account for the reasonable additional cost that must be incurred. So ODGFS would first have to exercise some discretion to decide what costs are reasonable additional costs. For example, in the case that this court held and stayed for this case, the PNP case, in that case, the providers had a nurse to staffing ratio change, I think that was by the Department of Health, and so they had some costs for nursing that went up that was recognized as a, a government mandate. I'm not sure it was recognized in that case as one, but it might have been an extreme circumstances case. At any rate, the providers asked not only for the nurses' wages to be paid for the extra nurses, but for other wages of other employees in the provider to be paid so that they could remain market competitive, something to do with the relationship between the nurses' wages and other people's wages. And I might not have all those details correct, and if I don't, I apologize. But that's to make a point that, for example, ODGFS might decide that the nursing, the extra cost for nursing would be important to reasonable additional costs to comply with the government mandate. But maybe those other costs that the provider's claiming weren't reasonable additional costs to comply with that government mandate. That's just a cost of doing business and doesn't come under the government mandate. Then ODGFS would decide what would account for those reasonable additional costs. It doesn't say to pay the reasonable additional costs. It would have been very easy for the General Assembly to write, ODGFS shall pay the reasonable additional costs. That would have been straightforward, and it would have created a different kind of an argument. In this case, ODGFS might choose to look at the fact that in the first discount year of the BWC premium, the providers, because of the prospective system, were getting paid as if they were paying the full premiums, but they were only paying a quarter that year. So they got to keep the extra money. Several years later, their premiums go back up. Now they're being paid as if they're paying a quarter when they're really paying 100%. So there might be some providers in which that was a wash if they stayed in the same provider that whole time and didn't change hands. ODGFS might like to look also at the safety rating of the provider and decide if any of the increase in their premiums weren't just to comply with the government mandate, but because they've become less attentive to worker safety. And then finally, ODGFS has some discretion in deciding how to calculate relief. One way would be to pay straight dollar for dollar. You had an extra $50,000 this year to comply with this government mandate. Here's a check for $50,000.
You're making a great argument about the discretion that can be exercised, which would obviously be a great defense to a mandamus claim that it isn't a duty at all, it's a discretionary exercise, which is why they want it to be a declaratory judgment, why you want it to be a mandamus. And yep. You want this court to say, well, we'll pick between one or the other. Isn't that where we are?
I don't think so, Your Honor.
You've given us some very good positions with respect to the discretion that can be exercised by the department as to what it will or what it won't consider as a reasonable increase.
Right.
And if I understand the position that Mr. Webster's advancing to us, it is, look, the rates for these payments have gone up 400%. We just want to get what the statute says we're supposed to collect. And we've tried mandamus, we've tried declaratory, and here we are in the Supreme Court trying to figure out what court we belong in, and what species of remedy we should advance. You seem to be arguing the department has all the discretion that they can exercise as to what they'll allow or what they may, but they have to do it by way of mandamus.
Our position is that...
That seems inconsistent
okay.
to me.
I think...
Can you help me with that?
The line of cases about mandamus that we've cited that would apply to this decision, the rule that's in those cases is if there's an alleged abuse of discretion by an agency or an official and that the decision has been non-appealable, the way you can challenge it is in mandamus. Mandamus can serve as a vehicle to correct an abuse of discretion. So if they can show that ODGFS abused its discretion once it's exercised it, of course, hasn't happened yet in this case, once it's exercised it, if they can show that there's been an abuse of that discretion, mandamus can correct that, and the court can say, yeah, you know, right there in your decision where you said this, that was wrong. You relied on the bad standard, or that doesn't make sense. That requires a leap of some kind. We don't think it's right. Do it again, and don't do that this time. We're going to correct your abuse of discretion. This case belongs in the Court of Common Pleas, or a higher court, I suppose, but the plaintiffs could elect that, in a mandamus vehicle so that it fits right into the line of cases that allow a quasi-appellate review in mandamus of a non-appealable discretionary agency decision. Discretion doesn't take you out of mandamus. It puts you into mandamus. That's our position. Does that address your question, Your Honor?
It helps a bit.
If there are,
thank
I
you,
see
Ms.
my time has expired.
Thank you, Ms. Thomas.
Thank you.
Mr. Webster, you've saved almost 2 minutes of your time.
Thank you. I think first we need to look that when the General Assembly enacted its changes from a retrospective to a prospective system, One thing didn't change, 511121. It has remained unchanged since it was enacted. The department shall pay reasonable cost. It's what helps keep people alive. Let's go away from Medicaid.
Do you maintain that you're entitled to dollar for dollar then on the increase in Bureau Walker comp premiums, and there's no adjustment or discretion to account for anything else? It's a strict dollar for dollar?
Precisely, because I'm entitled to my premium increase. If I've been a bad Medicaid provider, or I'm sorry, a workers' comp employer, I get a penalty. And penalties, by definition and by General Assembly directive, are non-reimbursable in Medicaid. So if I have that bad experience and I get a penalty rate, they don't pay it in the first place. But my premium rate is not related to my penalty experience. It's the premium rate.
Where is the language that says you get the dollar for dollar?
The General Assembly, when it enacted and said shall pay reasonable costs, the department's rules define workers' comp premiums as reasonable cost. Their own rules define it.
You're saying reasonable cost does not give them any discretion to do anything other than pay dollar for dollar.
They exercised their discretion when they said workers' compensation premiums are reasonable cost. And to go back to in my initial presentation, my premium rate is set by BWC. The types and number of employees I set is mandated by the Department of Health.
So do we have to determine who's right on that point then? Is that one
No.
of our issues? That
No.
you're Well, they're arguing that it's not dollar for dollar. So do we make that decision, or does the
No.
lower court make that?
I think once we get down to the lower court and we look and find, one, the department did exercise its discretion. When it issued the letter saying we're not doing anything, what it said was there was no government mandate.
But if we don't make the decision as to whether it's dollar for dollar, then how do we reach the issue of whether it's discretionary?
Well, we're not here on that decision. What we're on is there an adequate remedy at law, which declaratory judgment would appear to be when the General Assembly says any person interested or affected by a statute may have determined any question of construction or legal relations under it. That's 03 of 2721.
Aren't we also here on the well-established law that says that if an agency engages in some act, and the statute says there's no appeal from that act, that's a mandamus action. That's how all these workers' comp cases get to us. They're filed in common pleas court, abuse of discretion because the Bureau didn't give me the percentage of disability I wanted, and so it's a mandamus action. Why? You have to get out from under that, don't you?
I have to stay under Santos, Blackwell, Academy versus Barry 1, Academy versus Barry 2, Ohio Hospital Association, the majority, or three of those, Medicaid reimbursement decisions that this court specifically said mandamus is not available because there is a clear, adequate remedy at law declaratory judgment. So this court needs to reverse that entire case line of authority. It needs to find as well that our relationship with government is as if we were a retiree or an employee seeking benefits from BWC. And that doesn't define our relationship. Our relationship is not one of employment. It's not one of a retiree where I have, as a retiree, I've made contributions to PERS or the various retirement organizations, and I think I'm entitled to an adjustment, a tweak in my disability benefit or my retirement benefit. This is a comprehensive rate scheme that the General Assembly enacted to address a fundamental service to the public, which is delivered through a provider. And that's a fundamentally different relationship. These are general revenue funds, 35% of the general revenue funds. There's not one dime of PERS, STRS, any of that money that even passes through the general revenue fund. In fact,
to sum up.
I'm sorry. We look for you to affirm the Academy versus Barry decision is still good law.
Thank you. The case is submitted. You will be advised of our opinion.